Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hi folks, be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
And with that, the trumpets are blaring in the background, and he walks in on the red carpet. Here is Dr. History.
It is red carpet. I've never noticed that.
Well, duh. You've only been doing this program for
15 years. It is red carpet.
You're a sharp guy.
I am. It only takes me a while to catch on. Yeah.
If you were a fish, you would have been landed a long time ago.
That's true. Yep.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing good. Looking forward to Thanksgiving. My family's coming, so.
Are they really?
Yeah, going to have most all of them here.
Who does all the cooking? Your wife?
Oh, and the girls.
And the girls.
I have five daughters and one son. And
all in the same kitchen?
They bring stuff. They cook and bring it all together to my house.
Yeah, but still, they're all in the same kitchen. That's dangerous.
It works.
Oh.
That's all I can say.
Oh, you stay out.
Out of the way.
You're a good man.
Yes.
Any thank yous?
Not today, but I got a pretty good story today.
I'm looking forward to it.
We have talked about Butch Cassidy.
Oh, many times.
Yeah. And I'm going to talk to you specifically about one particular robbery that took place called the Castle Gate Payroll Robbery.
That wasn't too far from here.
No, in Utah. Well, this book that I'm taking it from is Outlaw Tales of Utah by a guy named Michael Rutter. So that's where the source comes. So this was considered the most technical robbery ever pulled in Utah. The most technical.
Really?
So, specifically, we're going to talk about this one. So, the daring and well-planned Castlegate payroll robbery of 1897 kind of made Butch's reputation on both sides of the law, good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
It was considered a criminal masterpiece, leaving little doubt that Butch Cassidy was one of the greatest criminal strategists the West had ever seen. And this job made him the undisputed leader of the gang known as the...
Hole-in-the-Wall Gang.
Wild Bunch. You were close.
Yeah, but didn't they reside in that famous place called the Hole-in-the-Wall?
Yeah.
But they had two names. I've heard it also referred to as the Hole-in-the-Wall Gang.
Right. And you're right.
Oh, okay.
So, but anyway, the Castle Gate Mine was the largest mining concern in the area and actually had hundreds of men working there. So huge payroll.
Really?
Okay. It had this tempting payroll. It didn't take long for such a prize to catch the attention of the Wild Bunch. And the mine near Price, Utah.
Oh, it was down there.
Yeah, down that way.
Okay.
Was between two famous hideouts, Brown's Hole and Robber's Roost. Which is, you know, not too far from Wyoming when you get up into that.
Yeah, it's down where the College of Eastern Utah is, down by Price. Yeah.
Yeah. So this made it easier for them to disappear, so to speak. Well, the company was understandably nervous about the amount of outlaw activity in the area. And to stop any robberies, the payroll trains were well guarded and paydays and routines were always being changed. Miners never knew on which day they'd get paid. Even the miner's paymaster didn't always know when the money was to arrive from Salt Lake City. So they were pretty careful.
That's a long haul from Salt Lake.
To down to Price, yeah.
Yeah.
But Butch had carefully studied the area, and he decided that a direct attack on the train was too risky. You know, he decided that wasn't a good thing. He concluded that the best approach would be to rob the paymaster just after he took the money from the train.
Oh, I see.
All right?
I see.
So since no one knew when the money would show up, the outlaws had to be ready, waiting just kind of inconspicuously until the payroll came in. So they just had to be patient. Now, here's a guy, I want you to remember his name, E.L. Carpenter.
Okay, got it.
He was the paymaster for the Pleasant Valley Coal Company, and he had a sore toe.
A what?
A sore toe. Okay. This will come. This will play into it. You'll see.
You come up with the doggondest angles.
So, because he had a sore toe, he hadn't changed out of his bedroom slippers before picking up the payroll from the noon train. He could hear the whistle blast signaling to the miners that later that day they would be getting paid. And paydays always made him a little nervous, and he'd be happy when this one was over. Okay, carpenter, sore toe, slippers.
I got it. Okay. I got it.
I don't want to confuse you.
You're not.
All right. So, as Carpenter lifted his sore foot onto the wooden stairs leading up to his office, he caught the glint of light on the barrel of a well-used Colt 45.
This doesn't sound good.
He felt a prod of the 45 in his ribs as the man came in close. In a quiet voice, the smiling cowboy with the big gun said in his right ear, quote, "I'll take them money bags, sir. Stay calm, since I'd hate to shoot a hole in you."
Well, that was cordial.
He's a nice
guy. That's cordial, yeah.
Yeah. Butch Cassidy had caught Carpenter.
The language in the Old West really was different, wasn't it?
It was. I love it. I love it. You know, Butch Cassidy caught Carpenter by complete surprise. It seemed impossible to Carpenter that he was being robbed while hundreds of miners were just hanging around waiting for their pay.
Where were they? Outside the door?
Yeah. But most of the men were foreigners who didn't speak much English.
Uh-oh.
They probably had no idea what was going on, and there was no mistake in that six gun. Without a fight, he loosened his fingers on the large case of the money sacks. Carpenter's assistant, a man named Lewis, threw down the bag of silver he was carrying and very prudently dove into a hardware store when he saw the gun. He wasn't sticking around.
He left.
He took off. So, now that he thought of it, Carpenter realized he'd seen these cowboys, this cowboy and one other sitting on the stairs when he'd walked out to the train. In fact, they'd been hanging around for days, and he noticed two unsaddled horses the men rode. They were tied next to his office. One of the men had now mounted his horse and had his hand on his pistol. Now, remember I said they were unsaddled, and
yeah,
I'll tell you why.
Yeah, okay.
Because you were going to ask.
I got it. Okay, wait a minute. Carpenter, sore toe, unsaddled horses. Got it. Okay.
And they've got the money.
And they got the money. Yeah. Okay.
So horses were rare in this mining town, and that should have been a clue. Okay. The canyon was so steep and narrow that there had hardly been room enough for the train and the buildings that served the miners. It was nearly impossible to bring a wagon. Saddle horses were discouraged. Besides, the miners weren't stockmen, so few, if any, ever had any horses.
What did they use for transportation?
Well, they were right there. They would go in and out on the train. So the miners didn't really need horses.
I see.
So Butch quietly walked to the man on the horse, Elza Lay.
Have to remember that too?
Well, kind of, because that's his partner.
This is home.
Elza Lay.
Okay.
And he handed him some of the loot. As Butch grabbed the reins of his horse, Carpenter regained some of his lost courage and ran, sore foot and all, up the stairs to his office, yelling, "Robbers, robbers."
With a sore toe.
With a sore toe, in his slippers. Someone fired a rifle. Don't know who. The miners pushed in closer to see what was going on. Butch's well-trained horse became nervous. When Butch tossed up a money bag near his horse's head, the animal spooked and bolted down the street.
Okay, without Butch.
Without Butch.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Now, so here you have it. Butch looked after his horse running away. There he was, alone, horseless, stunned, gun holstered, a large bag of Castlegate gold in one hand. He ran for his frightened horse. Well, his quick-thinking partner, Elza, headed off the horse. After several futile tries, he grabbed the reins and brought the gray mare named Babe back to his partner. Butch snatched the reins and in one jump managed to get seated on this tall horse while still carrying the gold. Bareback, keep in mind.
But Carpenter still got a sore toe.
Yes.
Okay.
That hasn't cured. I'm glad you got that. Babe reared up a few times. Elsa spurred his horse, and Babe and Butch followed him down this narrow canyon. All right. Well, up the canyon, the robber stopped and quickly put the money into canvas bags. They had at least $7,000 in $20 gold pieces, some currency and some silver. And they left the silver because it was too heavy to carry. And at this point, they picked up saddles that they'd hidden.
Okay, now I've got a very dumb question.
Okay.
You have been in the horse business.
Yes.
I'm in the horse business.
Yes.
Why didn't they keep them saddled in the first place?
Well, because they didn't want... Well, okay, I think we'll get to that.
Okay.
So let's keep going.
Oh, darn.
Since there were few horses in the canyon, the outlaws had pretended to be training their, quote, race horses, working them on the steep canyon trails. In that time, it was the custom for racing people to condition their animals by riding cross-country without a saddle. So each day after working out their horses, Butch and Elsa hung around the saloons, okay, drinking and just loafing. And so they didn't really look out of place. So that's why the horses didn't have saddles.
Okay.
Because they didn't want to be conspicuous.
Ah.
Okay, so here we go.
But Mr. Carpenter still has a sore toe.
Sore-toed Carpenter ran for the telegraph office. Okay, the nearest law was in Price, 10 miles away. The telegraph man told him the lines had been cut.
Uh-oh.
Carpenter hobbled to the train in his bedroom slippers and told the engineer to fire up the engine, so off they went. So the train took off towards Price, 10 miles away.
Okay.
Now, Carpenter had the whistle pulled down, signaling to the town that something was wrong. When the train pulled to a stop, Sheriff Donant was at the platform. It took him several hours to get his posse organized, and then he took off in the wrong direction.
Oh, boy, this sounds like a comedy of Don Knotts. Yeah.
In the meantime, Carpenter telegraphed the news about the robbery to all the local towns. But now we have a third member of the outlaw gang, Joe Walker, and he had cut the telegraph wires out of the canyon.
Oh.
So that's guy number three.
Yeah.
Joe knew the law would be on the trail, and he decided he'd better meet up with his partners. So they rendezvoused at a place called Desert Lake. Butch and Elsa decided to lead the posse on a roundabout route, while Joe took the money to a place called Florence Creek and back to the hideout in the Roost. Butch knew where he was going, and he wouldn't have the loot to slow him down.
Really?
So Joe took all the money.
Oh.
And they were going to meet
him. Is that a smart thing?
Yes, it was.
I see.
So at the same time the posses were gathering, finally, some members of the posse were less than enthusiastic about catching up with the robbers, because they knew who they were. The leader of the
posse... Oh, they did know it was Butch.
Yeah. So the leader of the posse, for example, had loaned his horse, Babe, to Butch for this robbery.
Now, you're really messing things up. I'm still trying to remember Carpenter with a sore toe, and now you're switching horses.
So the leader had no intention of catching up with his friend, who was on his horse, Babe.
Can we have a commercial?
Now, you know, Butch knew the Utah backcountry, and he had horses and provisions stashed so he could replenish his supplies. He spent the winter planning this job. He thought this out really well.
He's
pretty smart. Yeah. Besides, the locals were more than eager to loan or sell a horse. He'd always treated ranchers and farmers with respect and paid them well for their services. And there was little love lost between the local folks and the mining company. They didn't particularly like each other. At one ranch, Butch and Elsa pulled in about midnight with their horses, which were now just totally spent, just exhausted. Butch asked if they could exchange their exhausted horses for new horses. Butch picked out two good horses and asked the rancher what price was fair. The rancher said $20. Butch gave him $50. So you can see why he was kind of endeared by the local people, the ranchers, yeah, and the one thing and another.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a long chase, but Butch and Elsa were always in control. The famous lawman Joe Bush was not far behind. The Bush posse included Carpenter, who was still wearing his bedroom slippers.
With a sore toe
on his horse.
Uh-huh.
Now, here's where it gets a little interesting. A black dog named Sunday,
oh boy, here we go,
had befriended Butch and followed him down the trail. The black dog was keeping up pretty well. You remember, they're going pretty fast. However, after a while, it began to lag behind. Butch noticed that the Bush posse had pulled ahead of the dog. They passed the dog.
So the posse got ahead of the black dog that was following Butch.
Right. Okay. Now, Butch could see that his furry little friend was tired.
You're not telling me.
Hang on, Zeb. Butch had a soft spot for animals.
Uh-huh.
So he told Elza to wait in the rocks and fire shots at the posse with his Winchester, pinning them down. Now, Elza knew he was not to hit any of the lawmen because Butch's orders were to shoot but never to kill.
Yeah.
And he never did.
Yeah,
you know.
I know that, yeah.
Well, Elza started lobbing shots at the lawmen, who quickly took cover, while Butch slipped around them and rescued the faithful hound. He gave the animal a drink and circled ahead of the posse, carrying Sunday the dog on his saddle.
Sunday the dog.
Sunday the dog. Well, the dog and the outlaws made it to the robber's roost. Butch had planned well. Along the way, they had horses, like I said, and supplies and help from other gang members or ranchers when they needed it. They met up with Joe Walker. They divided up the gold. The posse gave up, and no one is sure what happened to the dog.
That was my next question.
I figured it would be. The outlaws hold up for nearly 3 months. The boy
in Robber's Roost.
Yeah.
Isn't it time to tell everybody where Robber's Roost was?
You know, I was going
to
look that up, but I think it's just right over in Wyoming. Just barely over the border. Yeah. So the boys played poker until they went stir crazy about the end of June. The Wild Bunch decided to head back to Brown's Hole and finally hitting a place called Krause Creek. They were loaded from the robbery, and they headed over the state line into Carbon County, Wyoming. So right up there in northern Utah, right? So their favorite watering hole were a couple of one-horse towns called Dixon and Bags.
Ever? Oh, I've been to Bags.
Have you?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's just barely into Wyoming, right? Okay. Well, the local merchants started sharpening the pencils because this would be good business. The bunch all bought new suits. They took baths. They got shaves. Some bought new derby hats, which you've seen pictures of.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, they shot up the town. This is kind of an understatement. In one saloon alone, there were more than 25 bullet holes in the bar, and who knows about the roof. Before the party ended, it was all in fun, and no innocent bystanders were killed. So, you know, one can only imagine how the townsfolk kind of took this. But they were kind of accustomed to these occasional little jaunts into town. But every bullet hole was gladly paid for, $1 a hole.
You're kidding.
They paid $1 a hole.
Butch Cassidy did.
Yeah, his gang.
Huh.
Because, you know, they were having a good time. They didn't want the bartender owner to be stuck with fixing all this, the holes in the ceiling and in the bar.
That's nice. You shoot the thing to smithereens and then pay for it.
Yeah. So, anyway, there's a lot of big talk about how well the job had gone, and the money flowed as fast as the whiskey. Rumor has it that Carpenter was the butt of a lot of toasted glass.
The guy with the sore toe.
Yeah. One butch cowboy even offered to send him a pair of boots since he'd heard that Carpenter was riding with the posse in his bedroom slipper.
Now, these places that they shot up, are there any of the remnants of those places still around today?
Well, you know where Montpelier is?
I do.
Folks, if you're ever in Montpelier, right along the main street, there's a what used to be a bank.
Right.
And it was the first robbery that Butch did. And it is now a Butch Cassidy Museum.
Uh-huh.
So if you stop in there, you can go in there, and there's a book that I got that I think is the best book about Butch Cassidy, and it's written by Butch's youngest sister's grandson, I believe.
Okay.
Grandson. And it talks all about...
And that's in Montpelier.
You're right, in Montpelier. But I think you can get the book, and I can't remember the name of the book, but it's about... And it talks about Butch going down to South America and the things they did down there, and then coming up in back home, and how Butch is supposedly buried under a fictitious name up in the state of Washington somewhere.
I've heard that.
Yeah. And there's enough evidence that he did not die in South America like the movie shows
indicates,
you know.
I'm really concerned, though. I've only got a minute left, but did Carpenter ever get that toe fit? What was the matter? Did he break it, or what was the matter with it?
Who knows? You know, the guy...
I mean, you led me on to remember it, so I'm remembering.
You know, I could make something up, but I don't know why he had a sore toe. Maybe...
Oh, we got a call quickly. Maybe he's got a sore toe, too. Caller, real fast. I got 30 seconds.
Sundance Kid. Who was he in at a place... Did she belong to Butch or the Sundance?
Etta Place was more involved with Butch. Sundance really didn't play as much into this whole story as the movie would indicate.
Yeah, I agree with that.
In fact, Sundance was arrested for killing a marshal in Utah and spent the rest of his life in the Utah State Pen.
That's right.
And under an assumed name, and died in the Utah State Pen in like 1953.
Let's just say, and I think Dr. History would agree with me, Hollywood enlarged the relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for your call. I got to run. Anything quick, wrap it up.
Nope, we're good.
I want to tell you how much that was interesting, but I think we should take a personal trip to go find the bullet holes.
We need to go to Bags and...
Or else
Dixon.
Pick up the dog.
Find that dog.
And take your slippers. Dr. History, God bless you, man. That was great.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.